Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Perpetual Notion Machine.
My name is Ángel Francisco Adames Corraliza.
And mine, Mayra Oyola. Welcome, welcome.
We are professors in the University of Wisconsin Madison. We work in atmospheric and oceanic sciences.
Okay, so today we're going to talk about the weather and how changing the weather has been over the last few months, especially if you recall a couple of months ago, maybe around November, where we thought that this was going to be a really brutal winter given the conditions of Madison Marathon, right?
Yeah. And so we were convinced that it was going to be a bad time. And it was a little bad. It wasn't great for a little bit, but then it warmed up in February or something like that. And then we started this wild spring.
Yeah, it was warm and then warmer actually felt almost like June.
Yeah.
And now it's cold.
It's cold and it's been windy, right?
Don't talk to me about the wind and the crosswind.
I feel like Madison, the Midwest in general, has like three seasons, right? Like summer, winter, and wind.
I agree with that. It's been really windy, especially in my particular case, I'm flying. So we have had to deal a lot with crosswinds at Madison Airport and areas of low-level jet across the pattern altitude. So it's been an interesting winter. But other than just the wind, we also know that we have had a lot of tornadic activity, not
severe
only
weather,
Madison,
yeah,
but all across the Midwest, right?
Yeah, this has been a very active spring, especially the month of April. Like, there's a lot to unpack and discuss about what happened last month, right? And just by looking at the Wisconsin, the Office of Climatology, and their
greetings to the Office of Climatology, by the way, which are next door to my lab. So I'm going to apologize publicly for all the noise my students make.
Yeah, just like walking around the hall saying hi to them.
Yeah, but they do such a great job at keeping all of the climatology.
Yeah, an incredible outreach. Yeah. Their social media presence, like a shout out to them.
Yes. So if you don't follow them, I strongly suggest that you do follow
Please follow them on social media. They are great. So there's a lot to going on, right? Like, this is probably the April with the highest amount of severe weather reports.
Yeah, here in Wisconsin, so and nationwide. So I think the numbers go 530 preliminary tornado reports nationwide by late April. So if you think about that, 530 is roughly a 100 above the average. Over 260 tornado reports during April alone here in the central U.S.
That's half of the total reports. Yeah,
so yes, it's a severe weather season here. And Wisconsin is actually, I believe, is the third state with the highest amount of tornadoes reported. We have up to 31 now, at least those are confirmed, between April 1st and April 14th. The state in the leaderboard is Illinois.
Yay, our neighbors.
Our neighbors with about 100 preliminary tornado reports.
Surpass 100 preliminary tornado reports by late April in Illinois.
Yeah, that's true. So we talked about the wind, and we know that that was one of the most noticeable features, or it still is one of the most noticeable features on the spring.
I was running yesterday and I was like, oh goodness.
Yes, and I am probably sick and tired. Most people that are listening to us are probably already sick and tired of the 40-50 mile per hour gust across Wisconsin and across the entire Midwest. So that has had some consequences, not only in the comfort, but also driving. It's more difficult. We have a lot of pollen and dust that's getting aloft also getting into the eye. So I saw a couple of students fighting the wind yesterday on campus.
The driving and the highway, like, I feel like the car, like tugging on the car, you know, like a sudden
push. The crosswind, yeah. I don't know. That's normally, you know, when you're flying, you crap into the wind. You cannot crap into the wind when you're driving.
Like, riding my bike too, like, I feel like the Do you want to tip it over? Yeah.
Yes. It's been, I would say, a very interesting, meteorologically interesting March and April. And right now, May seems to have started very cold.
Yeah. And it looks from the forecast that we're going to go through some ups and downs, but we'll talk about it in due time. But, you know, April had days that were climatologically more like June, with dew points in the 60s, almost rare record. I talked to people, at least it matched or was very close to record. High temperatures near 80, it very much early summer weather. And then now in first week of May, it actually feels like early April with like overcast days, temperatures in the 40s and low 50s, very windy.
40s, yeah.
So complete swing. If you look at the Madison climatology, you can look at the temperatures and you can see that we're well above our average in the last 2 weeks of April. And then we're now slightly below average.
Yeah, so we have had a couple of frontal passages repeatedly changing the conditions. We have seen a couple of clippers actually bringing some of those very windy conditions. But we had that false summer feeling, which is, I mean, for me, made me sad because I was already in summer mode. And all of a sudden now we're like,
I mean, it's almost like going back in time, right? Like everything started greening early and it looks very pretty outside. I took my hammock out, the earliest I've ever taken my hammock. I'm not complaining about that. but then I have to put the hammock back inside because it's cold.
Yeah. And so there are some consequences of that, or actually some potential causes for that. And I know right now, Angel, and you're more of an expert in El Niño summer oscillation than I am. But I think right now we're having a major transition in what the El Niño conditions or ENSO conditions are. There might be some influences on the Midwest. We're not the experts. Actually, Dan Weinmann, one of our colleagues,
is
the master expert on El Niño, especially the impacts here on the Midwest. But what can we say about what's happening with El Niño and what should we be expecting, at least large scale?
Yeah, so I actually was talking to the media a couple of weeks ago about this. So this is an event that's been ongoing for some time now. It started with a sudden warming off the coast of Peru in Ecuador. So I happened to be visiting Lima when the event started, more or less. And so I got to experience firsthand that sudden warming of the Pacific Ocean that is often an early sign of El Niño. And I believe it was about 10 degrees Fahrenheit above normal for that area, which is not record-breaking, surprisingly, because it's a big, big warming, but it is high. It is very high. A lot of the big good models are indicating that we are moving somewhere towards moderate to strong El Niño by the end of the year. So we're transitioning to neutral conditions, to strong conditions. And sometimes, but not always, an indicator of that transition is that sudden warming of Peru, which has already happened. So the signs are there, right? And so, you know, like right now, the NOAA CPC is estimating neutral conditions, 80%, right, till June. And then after that, like 60% chance moving to El Niño. Another plug to Dan, his cyclostationary El Niño model actually has the odds higher.
Oh, that's interesting. And I know when we experience El Niño, right, especially when I was living in California. In California, it's something that most people do know about and they're paying attention to the conditions, because that means that for the most part, you will expect more rain. Especially in California, that's an issue because rain is needed, but at the same time, normally it comes after a long period of drought.
Flash floods.
So that means that you're going to have a lot of flash floods, and they're very significant flash floods. When I was living there, we had portions of Highway 1 fall into the ocean. Yeah. So it was very impressive and very impactful to see. Of course, we know about what El Niño and La Niña do over the Atlantic Ocean, or
the hurricane
how they
season.
Impact the hurricane yeah. season. What can we say about the Midwest?
I actually is the Midwest is actually one of the more challenging areas, right? To understand what the impacts of El Niño are, but there are impacts in the interest of time, right? But if people are interested, we should definitely have a full episode on this and chat with the Wisconsin Climatology Office and maybe even chat a little bit with Dan. Bring Dan over, right? But the Midwest is actually one of the most challenging areas, and it actually varies from location to location.
Yeah, and so that's something for us to see. Definitely large scale. One thing that we have also seen that it's probably important is that because of the conditions that we have right now, which are very dry and also very cold and or warm in several regions of the Midwest, so not just only Wisconsin,
yeah,
we are probably going to have a more interesting, I would say, wildfire season.
Yeah.
So that's one thing that we have to pay attention to is the advection of smoke.
One thing I will add, because I was a little vague earlier, one of the clearest impacts of El Niño globally is increasing temperatures, because El Niño is essentially drawing energy from the ocean and then lodging it into the atmosphere. So global temperatures tend to be higher during El Niño episodes. So heat waves are more common, dry spells are common, and that's probably going to have some repercussions with fires.
Yeah, and we have had some smoke advection from Canada, and especially from Canada in the last few years. So that's something to be mindful of as the summer approaches here.
We have a last point here to discuss with respect to climate, right? And with El Niño, I think this is going to be an interesting point of concern, because as I mentioned, it is a warming of the atmosphere, right? And our planet is warming from anthropogenic climate change. And so expectations are probably that we're going to see a very, very hot fall, winter, and probably 2027 is probably going to see when we're going to see potentially the hottest year on record. Right.
Just before we wrap up, how long does one of these events may last?
El Niño events, they last like a year or two, right? So it's begun in Peru. It doesn't reach maximum amplitude till winter. And then the really big global impacts are winter and then the following year, right? So it's like a 2-year.
So we got to pay attention. That's the last message.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for listening to us. We're about to transition into the Spanish portion of our show. My name is Mayra Oyola, and I am here with
Ángel Adames Corraliza, and we're happy to be back. We have been on a break for some time now. But,
well, a break working.
Yeah, our jobs, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you for listening.
Bye.
Can't ride out one more storm.